If you're looking at the CV of a painter, it's fair to say you probably don't expect to find the words former elite downhill ski racer and track cyclist. But that's exactly what our guest on The Year That Made Me today was up to before a long list of severe and excruciating injuries forced Sophie Cape to give up her sporting aspirations. But intensity and a willingness to push to physical extremes are things that Sophie carried over into her second life as an artist, taking canvases into wild terrain and weather and painting with her whole body. And her rugged approach has earned Sophie Cape international and national acclaim, including the 2025 Hadley Art Prize, which is often described as the Archibalds of landscape painting. Sophie Cape, welcome to The Year That Made Me.
Thanks, Julian. That sounded very cool.
Well, indeed it is. The 2019 Australian Story episode about you was called Adrenaline Brush, and there is this intense full-body graphic animation that totes up all of your sporting injuries. It is quite the roll call. Just to give us a sense of how extreme your sporting pursuits were, could you run us through, maybe not the full list because that would take us a long time, but some of the high or low lights, depending on how you look at it?
The highlights are such an adrenaline rush. Downhill ski racing skiing's always been a passion of mine, but downhill is something else. You're so scared at the start, you want to die. But once you get going, it's amazing. Even if you crash, you're like, I want to do it again. But you do often crash, and I did particularly. And I've got, I added it up the other day, but it was like over 70 broken bones, multiple concussions, couple of comas, having to learn to walk again. I really did a number on myself. I won't list some more because it's ridiculous.
But it was injury that forced you out of skiing eventually. Tell us about the transition to cycling. How did that happen?
Well, the Australian Institute of Sport contacted me and said, look, we're doing a talent identification program for sprint cycling in the velodrome. And I had no idea what it was, but yeah, I was like, okay, I'll give that a crack. And they tested thousands of girls from all over the country and took about 20 of us and said, look, on paper, scientifically, you've got everything it takes to win gold at the Olympics. However, you just got to learn to ride a bike. And then they introduced us to the velodrome. But the cool thing was I was never scared of it because, I mean, it was nothing in comparison to a mountain at 140 k's an hour. So, yeah, I took to it like a duck to water and I loved it.
And how long were you involved in cycling? And again, how did the injuries come into play in terms of ending your aspirations of cycling for Australia?
Probably about 8 years, I think, I cycled. And it reached a point where I was suffering really badly with severe leg pain, and we did some sort of experimental surgeries and cut my legs open, cut all the fascia off them, which is sort of like the skin on a sausage. And then they started getting really big and I was getting more pain, and then we thought, oh, maybe there's not enough blood going into them. So we cut open my stomach and put grafts, patches in the arteries to make them bigger, and cut them off all the muscles and organs, so I had a direct route from my heart to my legs, and which was pretty cool. But I got even worse, and then the pain was so extreme, I started passing out on the bike, and that was pretty much it.
Amazing. Let's go right back to the beginning now, Sophie. Where did you grow up, and could you tell us a bit about your family?
Yeah, I grew up in Cremorne, which is, I break out in highs when I go back there now. It's a completely different place. But when I was there, it was all bushland. There were hardly any houses. What was there was sort of boarding houses for all the war vets that had PTSD, which they didn't really know what it was back then. So we just sort of had free reign and just ran around. And, you know, and I came from a family which I now call the nunnery. So there was no TVs, no screens at all. We weren't allowed to go to the movies. From the day we could walk, Dad used to make us run down to the point and back in the dark and do push-ups, sit-ups and star jumps. And
yeah, it sounds like Dad was pretty intense.
He was very intense, and, you know, he was ex-defence, and, you know, pain is only weakness leaving the body, and second place is the first loser, and all of that sort of stuff.
You had a very close relationship with him, is that right?
I did, yeah. I adored him. I mean, he wasn't around much because he ended up being a Qantas captain, but, you know, when he was there, he was quite influential.
And was he very, very strongly into sport as well?
Not so much. Only because he came from a small town in Cairns, he didn't really have the opportunity, but he was a very gifted athlete. Didn't matter what he did, he could pick it up instantly. And he looked like a 10-ton truck. He was, he would have been amazing in another generation. But, he had his pilot's license before he could drive, so he was just obsessed with flying.
You're not the first artist in your family, but in a way that might explain, Sophie, why it took a while for you to get to your current pursuit. Tell us about the artists in your family before you.
It was a passion in both my grandmother and my mother, but neither of them were allowed to follow it because of family obligations. And, of course, I didn't want to follow in their path either. So I went off and I went to uni. I did quite a lot of study. When I was injured, I'd come back on crutches. But, so I wanted to do something completely different. However, once I couldn't do that anymore, I was devastated and depressed. And I was like, and everyone was hassling me to go to art school. And I was like, fine, I'll just do 6 months and you can all leave me alone. But I loved it. And I made a conscious decision not to have a family because I'd seen it make having a successful art career impossible. And made the most of that, I have to say.
And obviously it was in a stage of your life where you'd had to deal with huge disappointment and depression. Could you just talk us through a little bit more about how you were feeling at that time and what made you actually make the decision to go or to apply to the National Arts School and what it was like to be accepted?
Yeah, I was very depressed and I didn't know what to do. I guess I was like, I'd spent my whole life working hundreds of different jobs to pay for everything. And I was like, I guess I better get a real job now and, I don't know, to try and make some money. But what I did discover is that, or have discovered throughout my life, what you often see as a disaster, if you embrace the change, it always leads to something unexpected that you would never have thought about before. And it's sort of new and fabulous and takes you down a whole nother journey. So once I sort of really figured that out, I was able to eventually deal with the trauma of losing all of those dreams and moving on and doing something else. But I was lucky. Most athletes don't have something else to go to. And, we don't really hear about the ones that don't make it, but it's really tough.
So, Sophie, what year have you chosen as the year that made you and why?
That was tough. I feel like every year has been life-changing. But I've chosen half of 2010, the end of 2010, and first half of 2011.
Well, I suppose we don't say the calendar year that made you, so yeah, we'll allow it.
Thank you. Do you want me to explain why?
Please.
Because the end of 22 was the end of art school. Start of 2011 was the start of my art career. So at art school I was involved in a play, and I was painfully shy, like even as a kid, I'd rather wet my pants, in primary school, wet my pants than stand up in front of the class. Yeah. And my greatest fear is talking in front of people. So, and also I honestly thought I had serious brain damage from all concussions. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm terrified. But even if I'm a tree or a rock or something, at least I'm getting out. Because I try and embrace all of my fears and push through them. And that's what you have to do is downhill. It's like you're terrified, but you just have to shut it down and go. So that was what art school was for me. And I did this play and did the audition and I was like, okay, cool. And then they put out the list, went to the first rehearsal. And they were like, oh, this is Sophie. She's a protagonist. And I'm like, oh, I don't know what protagonist is, but that
doesn't sound like
really
a type of tree,
bad.
Though.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Anyway, the play was like 3 hours long and I was in every single scene and I was like, oh, my God, this is my worst nightmare. But in the end, I managed to learn it all and I was like, oh, okay, I'm not as damaged as I thought. But also it did something really profound with my art practice because I had a certain skill and facility for art, but I hadn't fully embraced and embodied it, so which is what I like to do with things. And when you're doing theatre, you have to be really present and in the moment, and if you make mistakes, you've just got to run with it. So whereas in the studio, as an artist, you can edit. And so it taught me something really powerful because that's kind of why I work the way I do. there's no chance for me to cheat or edit. It's very much in the moment, and I get a huge adrenaline rush out of that, and I think I create more powerful and authentic works. Whereas if I'm in the studio, you know, I put a mark in a set, whatever, and it does what I say to it. But if I'm out in the landscape, it does the complete opposite, and then I have to deal with that. And it's exciting. I never know what's going to happen. And, yeah, so it helped me create a process that was very authentic to me, and it was true to myself, and it was about my history, my life, what suited. It was kind of like, I guess I found a replacement for being an athlete.
That's really fascinating that something like performing in a stage production could have that breakthrough that leads to a conversion in your practice as an artist.
I think anything you do is important and valuable. So I started in architecture, and then I did design, and I became obsessed with typography and old school calligraphy, and that's how I paid my way through art school. You know, you get a dollar a letter or whatever, like writing old, you know, invitations and things like that.
Yeah, right.
And writing stuff. But and I love that facility of using your hand and old stuff. I'm very, I guess, traditional at that. But that transfer has transferred across to my art. I suppose with composition, and I use calligraphy in my works. I just think it's, you shouldn't dismiss things that you've done before and think that was a waste of time, because everything does help.
You are known for taking your canvases outside and often into physically extreme places. When was the first time you experimented with that as a technique?
So at art school, you've got to figure out what you want to do in the end, and I was doing self-portraits, but literally like of my face and body and stuff, to try and deal with the trauma of my injuries. And it wasn't sufficient, I suppose. It wasn't very rewarding or helping. And then I thought, well, instead of standing outside the canvas and the subject, what about if I get inside? So it's more of a internal emotional response. So I got these huge canvases and put them on the ground and stood inside them and then painted the feeling rather than the literal illustration of, if that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I found that really exciting. And then I was like, okay, well, I don't enjoy studios because I'm locked inside, so, and I don't have that kind of willpower to go in 9 to 5. So I needed something that was more exciting. So I started going out into the landscape, which was similar to being an athlete. You're competing against the mountain and the environment and yourself. And again, I would put these canvases all over on the ground, you know, rough ground, sticks underneath, and I'd sleep out there in a swag with my dog in the middle of nowhere, no communication, no internet. I loved it. And I would stay out there for days, weeks. And sometimes I'd leave them out there and come back later. Oh, my God, I've lost canvases all over the country. everywhere stuck in trees, in dams. No idea where some have gone. And it was exciting because I'd go to throw something in one direction and it would end up in the other. And I'd be like, oh, crap, and I'd have to deal with that. And then so on and so forth. And it was like myself and nature kind of competing and working together, working against each other. And it was really exciting. So the weather and the elements play a really strong part in my works. And also I foster and collect the local materials. I don't shop in a paint shop really. I use the dirt that's in that location, burnt trees as charcoal, animals get into them. You know, I love that, all of that sort of unknown excitement. So what happened? I was talking about the 2010, 2011. So I graduated and I was so lucky. I got picked up by Tim Olson, Olson Gallery, which is in Malara, straight out of art school, which is unheard of. And he showed all my works from graduation at the end of that year, and that was a sellout. So, and also I won a bunch of residencies when I graduated. So basically I had a chunk of money, had these residencies, and I took off overseas. Let's see, in Paris, I worked down in the catacombs. Might have ended up with a few human bones in my paintings. came back to customs. Austria, I was working outside. It was so cold and I'd have to run in and out and the paint would freeze, but then it'd get snowed on and that would do something else to it. Anyway, they got caught in a massive avalanche and I was like, oh, God. And Avalanche set really hard. Avalanches, they set like ice. And so it took me weeks to dig them all out. And I dragged them back to where the residency was, and they were like twisted minty wrappers. And I came out the next morning to get them and stretch them back out. And they'd gone to the tip, and I was like, oh. So I then had to go down to the tip and fish them out and bring them back. So they went, and then those works ended up, I went and did a solo show at Hong Kong Art Fair. So they were hanging in Hong Kong Art Fair. But I love that history, which is of the work. And I love all the layers and all of that story behind it. People don't know about that, but that's how I like the challenge and the result of the works.
It's interesting you say people don't know about it, because I could imagine that the story behind what the canvas has gone through could be a really significant attraction to people who want to buy your works. But that's something you keep to yourself, is it?
Well, no, not necessarily. If they ask, I'll tell them. but for me, well, I think the way I'm lucky is fortunate is that for me the process is what's important. That's my therapy. Mm. So what ends up on the wall isn't such an issue for me, which is, I mean, even though, you know, if they don't sell you, yeah, it's tough as an artist money-wise, but it's worth it in the end, but it is tough. But however, I've been really lucky in that they do sell well, and I think that's because there's an authentic process to the making of them. And so what happens with abstract, I've discovered, I never wanted to be an abstract artist, can I just say that? But I've ended up as that. Anyway, and what's cool about it is that people stand in front of it, and then I've even had people cry, which is amazing. They'll see their own story inside it, and they'll tell me all the time. I say, oh, I can see this, I can see what happened to my son, or this is reminds me of, and I sort of let them run with that, because that's what I love, because they relate to my experiences with life. I mean, I wouldn't make the works I make if I hadn't gone through all of that stuff beforehand. So, and I think it's very much a relationship between the landscape and the human condition. Like, I kind of call them like internal self-portraits. Mm. But, you know, working with the landscape. So people can always relate to something in the works.
And Sophie, you described your process as your therapy. Could you give us a bit of an insight into, if you like, the therapeutic personal effect of making art for you?
Like I said, when I retired, I was very lost. It's the whole, you know, the challenge of training, perfecting your body, like challenging yourself to these extreme levels. When that's gone, it's really tough being in the real world. And, you know, I've tried drugs and alcohol and all of that stuff. Nothing comes close. So art school is where I managed to find that a replacement for that. And I think, yeah, I would have been a real mess ultimately if I hadn't hunted down something else. I guess as an athlete, if you don't really deal with mental health issues because you don't have them, because you train, I think you train them out of yourself. Like, because you're training so hard, you don't focus on your head. It's all about your body. And it's not until you can't, and particularly for me, because I literally can't do anything physical anymore except for paint. I can't run, or I just sort of pass out from muscle issues. So I can't cycle anymore. I certainly can't ski. So all of a sudden I discovered that my brain wasn't so healthy and didn't really know what to do about it. But I have found as long as I'm painting and working, I'm fine. I'm okay. So it's a way of replacing that intense training in a really authentic way for me that accesses that side of me and calms my head down.
Now, you won the 2025 Hadley's Art Prize, Sophie, for the work Thunder Shifts the Shivering Sands.
Everyone stumbles on that.
Which is a tongue tie, yeah, exactly, at any time of the day, let alone Sunday morning. The judges said it had a strong, embodied, site-responsive and honest record of environmental upheaval and of land torn by flood and landslide. And they described it as having an almost primal energy, which rings very true with some of the processes that you've described for us. Sophie, could you describe that work, Thunder Shifts the Shivering Sands?
My titles are quite poetic, and that harks back to my studies, which was very, you know, I love philosophy and poetry and writing and all that. So sorry, that's where that comes from. But okay, you know how life is, it's always good and bad. There's beauty and horror. You can't have one without the other, and you can't appreciate one without the other. And so that's what I'm very, we call it the sublime in art. That's what I'm very interested in trying to capture, that crossover or that line between the two. So the works are kind of intense, can be quite dark, but they're also, I try and make them, I try and capture both. So that's why I love the Australian landscape, because it's the survival and decay is very, very obvious out there. And then also where humans have intervened with the landscape, or, you know, or there's been natural disasters, I love, that's a really vital place for me to work as well, because it's that, you know, again, the humanity and the non-humanity, sort of bringing them together. So that one for Hadley's, I was, you know, COVID had hit, my car was, I couldn't afford to fix my car, I was damaged and I was stuck. I actually now live in Gerringong and I was stuck here, and I, it's very, very green and I don't like green, and I was like, I'll never work here, but it's a great place to come back to after you've been out in the red of the desert. But I didn't have a choice, and I had all, I collect things when I'm out there, and I had them in buckets, bones and rust and stuff all over the garden, and the rain had soaked into everything, and there was this beautiful, well, disgusting gunk everywhere. And I was like, oh, that's interesting, and started throwing that on canvases, and I was like, oh, yum, that's all, it was all rust and crap, and I was like, oh, this is really fun. And it was, so it's sort of about, do you know what I mean? So I'm abstractly accessing the weather and the location. And then I went down to, I was like, okay, I need some local soil. So I went down on the train tracks of Gerringong. I climbed under the fence with the dog and dug up some soil, because it was this beautiful blood colour, and put that in with some calligraphic drawing, which was, so I went down to the beach and I sketched for a whole day, like the patterns in the water, which is really hard, can I just say, and it's a nightmare. And anyway, I came back and drew that on the canvas, so it relates very closely to Gerringong, but you wouldn't really see that in the work anyway. Yeah. And then I surprisingly won the Hadleys, which was amazing. And it was just when I was, it was at a point where I was helping out with the Airbnb on the farm, and the guests there can be really disgusting. It was pouring with rain. And, you know, it had been, since COVID, it's been really tough for artists, and a lot of grant, well, actually all of the grants and all the sponsors, everything's just dried up. So, and sales are really poor. And I was like, God, why am I doing this? I mean, I know why, and I was never going to quit, but I, you know, you have these moments. And I was, you know, in the rain trying to drag these hideous, these rubbish bins full of crap, and I was just like just cussing and swearing again, and then I got this phone call, and I never pick up my phone, but I did this time, and they were like, there was Hadley's, and I was like, you're kidding. I mean, I hadn't even booked a flight down there, because I thought there's no way. So they flew me straight down, and yeah, so it was such a lifeline and such a boost to my confidence, which was really, I mean, you shouldn't need that, but sometimes it does help. And yeah, so that, I got the car fixed. I had some surgeries. The dog needed an ACL reconstruction, so she got ticked off. And yeah, I was, oh God, it was a lifesaver.
Well, it sounds like you put that prize money to very constructive and diverse use. And Sophie, it's been really fascinating hearing about your process and your life. Thank you so much for joining us on The
My
Year
pleasure.
That Made Me.
Thanks for talking to me.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. And we always finish with a piece of music that you get to choose. So what have you chosen for us and why, Sophie?
I kind of listen to very dark music, but that I also think is beautiful. So it's kind of like Gregorian chants, Tom Waits, Nick Cave. And I've chosen one which is, I couldn't decide between Bela Lugosi Is Dead by Bauhaus, which is funnily enough about vampires, and What's He Building In There by Tom Waits, which is funnily enough about this creep making things in his shed, which reminds me of how I work in the studio when I'm in it. So I don't know which to go with. Bela Lugosi is quite long.
All right. Well, then as we head off into the marathon that is Bela Lugosi Is Dead by Bauhaus, Sophie Cape, thank you once again for joining us on
Thanks,
The Year That
lovely.
Made Me.
Cheers.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.